Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. And if you own a Volkswagen diesel, well, you have our sympathies. It's bad news because the German auto giant has been cheating. As you've probably heard, VW has been equipping millions of its diesel models with software to make the car pollute less during emissions testing, but then pollute a whole lot more in violation of U.S. environmental laws when they're driving normally.
A research team at West Virginia University made the initial discovery, and at first, they couldn't believe the results and thought they must have made a mistake. Here's John German of the Berlin-based International Council on Clean Transportation, which commissioned the test, talking to NPR.
It's the sort of thing you just don't go around accusing companies of doing it unless you're absolutely sure.
Well, now they are sure. VW CEO Martin Winterkorn has resigned in disgrace. The company's stock is down by one-third, and VW owners across the country feel very duped.
News of Volkswagen's widespread deception prompted our friend Hiawatha Bray to ask, how do we know our computers are telling the whole truth?
His answer? We don't.
Hiawatha Bray writes about technology for the Boston Globe. He joins us regularly here on Radio Boston, and it's good to have you back, Hiawatha.
Glad to be here.
We're also joined by Ray Malyatsi, host of NPR's Car Talk. And Ray, it's great to have you on Radio Boston. I think it's the first time.
It may be.
Welcome to the program. Listeners, we want to ask you to get involved in this conversation. Do you own a Volkswagen diesel? How do you feel about the VW scandal? But really, this is a question not just for VW owners, but everyone about just how far we can trust our technology. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston. Hiawatha, I'd like to start with you. In your column today, you say this scandal is a warning to everybody who's ever assumed that the stuff on your computer screen is the gospel truth. I'd love to expand on that. So what does this say about how easily our digital devices can mislead or lie to us?
Well, it should say something that everyone ought to be aware of instinctively when we use a computer. We don't know what they're doing. And that's the simple truth. It doesn't even matter if you're a computer scientist. Any given piece of software running on any machine is doing stuff that you don't understand and can't possibly know about. You are taking it on trust that that computer is doing what it says it's doing. You can't know for sure. Almost always, it is doing what they tell you it's doing. I mean, people are not usually trying to rip you off. But it's the nature of computer technology that the possibility becomes so strong. For example, I didn't mention this in the column, but I have been mystified by the urge of some people to go to electronic voting. I mean, it just seems to me obvious that if you have to cast your vote by feeding it into a computer, you are totally at the mercy of the software on that computer. It's much safer to put it on a piece of paper, because you can have a computer count the pieces of paper, but even if the computer then screws up in some way, you still have the paper. If all you have is a computer, you've got an option. You've got a possibility that you'll never know the truth.
Yeah. Now, Ray, as the automotive expert, I've got a couple of really basic questions for you. First of all, why did VW want to do this, cheat the system in this way?
Well, I think they were motivated by a desire to usurp Toyota and the hybrid phenomenon, and maybe even some of the electric cars too, and show that their diesel technology could equal performance and actually exceed performance and equal the mileage that those vehicles get. And I think that was their motivation, and they wanted to make the cars sellable in all 50 states.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they had to work very hard at that. and you know, my gut feeling is that someone at the top, I mean, I don't think any low-level engineers were involved in this, in the plotting, per se, but the directive probably came from the top. Look, we've got to make these things do 0 to 60 in so many seconds. It's got to get 48 miles to the gallon. It's got to meet, you know, U.S. emission standards. And I don't care how you do it, do it. Well, they couldn't do it without pricing the car out of the market, perhaps, so they had to cheat.
Yeah. And Ray, can you explain how they did cheat? I mean, how does this so-called defeat device work? I mean, it's basically rewriting software, right?
Yeah, I think what they did, and I'm not privy to all the information, obviously, but I think what they did is they installed some kind of an algorithm in their computer which enabled them to detect when the car was actually being tested.
In other words, when the computer was getting inputs from the vehicle speed sensor, that is, sensing that the vehicle was in motion,
yep.
And when it was getting inputs from the steering angle sensor, that the car was actually being driven and the steering wheel was being turned, it went into some mode where it perhaps shut off some sensors that weren't reading pollution that was coming out the back, especially these excessive nitrous oxide emissions. And they were able to do that pretty cleverly. And don't forget, you know, these tests are not conducted by the EPA. The tests are conducted by the manufacturers. The results are submitted to the EPA, and with some, you know, tacit understanding that we did everything we could to make the test legit, and the car passes.
Right, right. So, Hiawatha, here's the thing. You know, here's what I'm thinking of. I was reading about this really interesting piece in Mother Jones. The title is "The VW Scandal is Just the Beginning," and they have this sort of troubling line: the car of the future is a computer with wheels, and wherever there's software, you'll also have bugs, hacks, and blue screens of death. But it's
and that is all absolutely true.
Yeah,
and this actually underscores how creepy it is, because in recent weeks we have had these stories about the Jeep, for example, the Jeep that was remotely hacked from 10 miles away so that it could be shut down on the road. You'd be driving down the interstate and your car would die because a hacker attacked it. And Jeep, Fiat, an Italian automaker owns Jeep, had to recall 1.4 million vehicles. That's what happens. That's what could happen when the bad guys take over. Now we're finding out we can't trust the good guys either. They could be fiddling with the software for a variety of reasons, and it's not just cars, of course. I write in my column about how software can be slanted in any number of ways to give us a skewed view of the world. And the only way we find out about a lot of these things is if it just sort of somehow leaks out or if somebody just happens to notice it. And everything we do with a computer can be skewing our vision of reality. When you do a Google search, you're going to see something different from what I see when I do a Google search, because Google has been analyzing you, and it's going to show you something different from what I see. And if you, in many instances, that's a good thing. It can be helpful. It can be beneficial. But as I say in the column, suppose all you look at are conservative political sites, and every time you do a search for information on Google, they send you to the conservative sites because that's what you like. Now there's a whole view of the world you're not getting anymore.
Yeah, yeah. And this
that could be dangerous.
And this becomes really frightening when people who are using Google think that they're using it in such a way that they're accessing impartial information, but instead...
That's right.
Instead,
and there's a lawsuit. They are being sued over in the European Union and in Russia for the way they deal with shopping queries. If you ask to buy something, you're looking for something to buy on Google, they put their shopping information up on top, and they push everybody else's lower down. And the thing is that in many cases, some of these options, like Amazon.com, might be better for consumers. But Google thinks you should see what they want you to see. So you're getting a skewed view of the world. And in the case, well, I mentioned in my column, the case of Yelp. Yelp was sued. You know, they do the ratings, and they are accused, they say they don't do it, of lowering companies' ratings if these companies don't buy advertising on Yelp. A federal court last year said if they want to do that, they can.
Yeah.
It's legal. So Yelp can actually start biasing its search results to profit Yelp.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing we have to think about.
Ray, you know, I'm curious about the fix. So a whole bunch of these cars have been recalled. I mean, is it hundreds of thousands of them? I've lost track of the number. It's not in front of me, but it's a lot of these cars. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be fixed, though, right? Because it's going to be incumbent upon the car owner to bring them in for the fix. And a lot of times when cars are recalled, folks don't do that.
And don't forget, a lot of people who bought diesel cars don't want to see the performance diminished.
Right.
They don't want to see the mileage change, so they may not, in fact, respond to the recall. They, if there's some way to compel them to do it, I think there should be, because from what I've been able to ascertain, these cars are putting out 40 times the nitrous oxide emissions that they said they are.
Yeah. Are you worried? Oh, yeah, sorry, go ahead, Ray. I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
No, but I wanted to say, we were talking about the Jeep earlier. I wouldn't want to equate what happened to the Jeep with what's going on with Volkswagen. The Jeep thing was just kind of sloppy engineering.
Mm-hmm.
But this was on purpose.
Yeah, this
they,
was...
They set out to deceive.
Yeah.
And that's pretty reprehensible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
However,
by the way, can I jump in on this cost car thing? Because I was reading something fascinating about this.
Sure.
One of the ways that other car companies have dealt with this problem with diesel engines is that they build this extra system into the cars that inject a nitrogen compound called urea into the exhaust to clean up a lot of the emissions.
Well, Volkswagen does that too.
Well, not on these cars, apparently. On most of these cars, apparently, they don't have that. That is one theory as to why they did that.
Hmm.
And that, and from what I understand, it costs thousands more dollars to build that onto the cars. And one concern is that fixing this problem isn't just a software fix. They might actually have to build these urea devices into all these cars to actually bring down the emissions, and that could be totally impractical.
Listeners,
I would be surprised if they had a retrofit on the drawing board when they started manufacturing these cars.
Wow.
You think they do?
No, I don't think. I wouldn't be surprised if they do, thinking that at some point if they got caught, they wouldn't have to rebuild the whole car, or worse than that, give people their money back.
Guys, hold on a second.
$1,000.
Hold on a second. I just want to invite our listeners back into this conversation. We're talking about the Volkswagen emissions scandals and what it says about how far we can or can't trust our technology, our computers, our screens. With us is Hiawatha Bray, tech writer for the Boston Globe, and Ray Maliazzi, co-host of NPR's Car Talk. And you can join us at 800-423-8255. Let's go to Camille, who's calling from Franklin. Hi, Camille. You're on the air.
Hi. I cannot express the rage I feel about this. My husband mindfully chose his TDI Golf several years ago. He convinced his mother to buy one. It feels we spent more money than we expected to, and it feels like being a vegan and then finding out the seitan that you've been eating is made out of pet bunnies or something.
Pet bunnies, that's just wild bunnies.
Camille, I feel your pain, and I guess I should have disclosed early on, I'm a VW owner, although not a diesel VW owner, but I've come close. Ray, I came close to buying one. You're the professional car advice guy. Give Camille something that she can feel better about.
Well, the only thing I can make you feel better about is that they're going to have to fix it, and they're going to have to make you whole. And how exactly they're going to do that, I don't know. And it may take them years to do it, by the way.
Hmm.
I mean, they're not going to be able to take all these cars in one fell swoop and correct them all, especially if it involves some kind of a serious retrofit.
Yeah,
I mean, that's going to take many, many hours, if not more than that. And that's going to be a huge task. And I don't think it's going to put Volkswagen out of business, but it's going to hurt them. It's
interesting, Ray, and obviously I don't need to tell you, I'm no expert on this, but I was reading this piece in Rolling Stone, and the writer there, this is Gareth Fuller, claims that the fix might be something as simple as what they call in the software business a patch, where they just basically have to change a piece of code and load it up to the car, and it just overwrites the computer program and puts it right. It didn't sound like an expensive fix, but I don't know if that's correct.
And that's likely. I think they may be able to do that. What it's going to do is it's going to diminish people's MPG.
Yep. Yeah.
Or the performance, or both.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, so people are going to feel ripped off, and it's going to hurt their brand for a long time. But, you know, plenty of other brands have been hurt by these kinds of things. I mean, in the 80s, late 80s, Chrysler had the thing with the hatchbacks popping open, and when there was a rear-end collision, and children especially sitting in that third row of seats get spilled out onto the roadway, strapped in with their seatbelts, but they would die nonetheless. Ford Explorers had rollover problems because of the faulty tires they bought from Firestone. People forget.
Mm-hmm.
People do forget, and this will get forgotten too. And you might ask, for example, is what Volkswagen did more reprehensible than what Chrysler did by ignoring what I believe was like a 50-cent fix on the latch that would have prevented those hatches from popping open unless there was a severe collision. They were popping over on the 20-mile-an-hour rear-end collisions, and children were getting spilled out the back and getting basically run over.
Yeah, horrendous.
You know, and that's reprehensible because I think they knew that there was a fix at hand, and it was cheap, and they didn't do it.
But I think
I don't know, maybe it's just me, but this particular one just feels worse somehow because of the sense that they are trying to almost rewrite reality. They're playing with our brains. They're denying us vital information, hiding it from us by using software. And that creeps me out because software's in everything. And if companies start doing this kind of thing on a routine basis, it's pretty scary.
Yeah.
We don't understand it. We can't wrap our heads around it.
Exactly.
Feel
we don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
We're trapped.
One more question. I want to go to a couple more callers. But this idea of the car of the future being a computer on wheels, do you expect, Ray, as someone who sort of follows the automotive industry, knows a lot about cars, that we're going to see a lot more of this stuff going forward?
A lot more cheating?
A lot more cheating, a lot more sort of, gee, I didn't know my car was doing that, and the whole sort of mystery and uncertainty that, you know, computer technology adds to everything. I mean, it's glorious, it's fantastic, it does all kinds of wondrous things, but then suddenly things are happening that you didn't even know were happening.
Yeah, and I think some of it will be accidental and some of it will be intentional. I bought myself a wonderful television that decides at 2 o'clock in the morning that it wants to turn itself on. It's exasperating. I don't know how to fix it. Except unplug the stupid thing every night. You know, but we are frustrated by the technology around us because, unlike, you know, televisions of old, where you could give them a belt on the side or,
that's right,
or whatever, or take a tube out and fix it, those days are gone, and they're certainly gone for everything. And cars, for sure.
Yeah, a piece of tin.
Very complex now.
A piece of tin foil and a hanger used to work wonders on a television, but no longer.
Exactly, but no longer.
Right. Let's go to.
Try that.
Let's go to Mike, who's calling from Somerville. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi there. I just wanted to say that I work in the aviation industry, and you know, we deal with complicated software systems all the time. And the way that we ensure that the software works the way it's advertised is, you know, the FAA requires us to go through extensive validation efforts on our software and provide copies of all the source code to them. So something similar like that could be done for safety critical items like cars or voting machines. The problem is that the cost associated with it would be astronomical.
No, he's making an excellent point. There are a bunch of people talking about this, like over at Columbia University, Evan Moglen was talking about this in the New York Times. He's been saying for years that critical software systems like the ones in cars should have to be totally open so that any programmer can analyze them and figure it out. I don't think the car industry would go with that. But at the very least, they ought to have some requirement that they be given to an independent testing organization that can verify that they do what they claim to do.
Wow. Well, fascinating problem. Folks, we've been talking about the Volkswagen sort of scandal and what they've done and about the car of the future, which I guess is going to soon be known as a computer with wheels. But Hiawatha Bray writes about technology for the Boston Globe. He joins us regularly here on Radio Boston. You can find a link to his piece in today's Globe at radioboston.org. Thank you, Hiawatha, for putting this interesting conversation in play.
It's been fun. Thanks a lot.
And Ray Maliazzi, host of NPR's Car Talk. Great pleasure to have you, Ray. Thank you for your wisdom, as always.
You're quite welcome. My pleasure.
And stay with us. Coming up, rearranging Pink Floyd, Janis Joplin, and Led Zeppelin for the cello. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.